To get to Braddock, Pennsylvania, you drive east and then south from Pittsburgh, wind up and down some hills until you see the huge plumes billowing up into the sky. That's the Edgar Thomson Works, Andrew Carnegie's first big steel mill, now owned by USX. Edgar Thomson is one of the last operating steel mills in the Pittsburgh area. At one time, it provided more than 6,000 jobs. Now fewer than 1,000 people work at the plant. Much of Braddock, once a bustling mill town, lies in ruins. Unemployment is high, the average income low. It's easy to forget that people still live and work in Rust Belt towns like Braddock. People like filmmaker Tony Buba, who was born and raised in Braddock, and has made more than a dozen documentary movies on the town and its people. He has the story of Braddock now, Rust Belt Blues, produced by Dan Collison.
Right around here along the Juan River, where the railroad tracks and the steel mill are now, this is where General Edward Braddock and his men were wiped out by the French and Indians back in 1755. A young officer by the name of George Washington witnessed the slaughter and realized that the British were not invincible. A lot of Braddock residents are convinced it was then and there, right here in Braddock, that George Washington got the idea for the American Revolution. So as you enter Braddock, there's a monument. It used to have a bronze plaque that read, "Where our nation's liberty was conceived." But someone stole the plaque. Now, as you enter the town, a sign says, "Welcome to Braddock, odor-controlled capital of the world," courtesy of a local air freshener company. When I was a kid, that sign used to read, "Welcome to Braddock, Valley's greatest shopping center."
Braddock, city of magic.
You might already know a little something about Braddock if you've seen any of my movies.
Where have you gone?
This country belongs to the people. It don't belong to the multinationals.
Or you might have read about Braddock in the 1941 novel, Out of His Furnace, about Slovak immigrants who came to work at the Edgar Thomson plant.
So the mills came to Braddock, stripping the hills bare of vegetation, poisoning the river, blackening heaven and earth and the lungs of the workers, who were in the beginning mostly American and English.
That's Dave Demarest. He teaches in the English department at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. He had Out of This Furnace republished back in the 70s. These days, Dave likes to take his dog, Molly McGuire, up to the Mons Cemetery in the hills above Braddock and mingle with the past.
This is a worker cemetery, and you're really seeing a kind of record of the history of the different ethnic groups that lived and worked in the town. You start at the lower level, the earlier stones that are kind of German and Anglo and Irish and so on. As you move up the hill, you get much more into a Eastern European, particularly Slovak. We're standing here about halfway up the hillside in a Slovak section of the cemetery. And you sort of have the feeling when you stand up here that it's these heights, kind of, these beautiful hills that for an earlier generation of people in this area, they couldn't really afford to live in.
My parents and I have always lived in Lower Braddock, on the other side of the tracks.
I'm Mrs. Edward Buba, Angie Buba. I'm the mother of Tony and Pasquale. I have two sons.
My mom was born in Italy.
Family
arrived in Braddock when she was 8 years old, along with the Depression.
When we came here in 1929, the things were bad, but we had every store from one end of Braddock to another. The stores were all there. Grocery stores, furniture stores, three movies, anything, a lot of dress shops, hat shops, shoe shops. We had everything under the sun, and it was great. My dad had a business on Braddock Avenue, had a shoemaker shop, and every Saturday night would sit there in front of the shop and watch the people, just like a parade going up and down. You couldn't, you had to go out in the street to walk because there was so many people shopping, coming from everywhere to shop in Braddock. But through the years, people moved away, people have died, and it just got bad. But I still like it. It's home. It's home, no matter how bad it is, it's home. So.
The This is the Plaza Restaurant, a hangout for old-timers and assorted characters. There's a lot of history here.
My name is Joe Abbey, former professional wrestler, and now engaged in a repossession services of repossessing automobiles. I do locksmith work, investigations, and that's about it.
So what? Who'd you wrestle under? What was the?
I wrestled under the Red Demon in the WWF for 20 years.
Has that helped you with your repossessing of automobiles?
Well, it gave me a little bit of a name, but people didn't recognize who I was because I was always hooded.
My name is Jim Roy. I'm from Braddock. I was in business in Braddock for over 34 years. I'm now in the process to try and catch up with Tony Buba. I'm trying to produce a movie. And we already wrote a book. The title of the book is Proof Your Mind is God, and we're waiting on it to be published. It's in the publishing companies now, and I expect this book to be a bestseller, and the reason why is that it tells the truth about why people succeed and why people fail.
Jimmy Roy should know. Over the years, he started up more than a dozen entrepreneurial ventures in Braddock, including a drive-in used furniture store and car lot. They all went under. He and his partner, Dave Spear, even tried something called Mind Power.
We established a Mind Power school, which didn't last very long because he went into the crystal business. So that we severed our relationship there.
You had a singing group with him, too.
Yeah, the name of the group was J. Roy and the Optimist. We used to be booked at the backyard in Braddock, and we had a wonderful time down there until we lost our main singer, Miss Hunsiger. We don't know where she went to.
My name is George Stupak, part owner of this Plaza restaurant.
There's been like characters coming into this restaurant ever since I was a kid. That's like,
and I throw you too many times out. Good old days, eh? Saturday night, for 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the morning,
it was packed.
It was packed. And now it's no more. This valley is dead.
And Braddock, once the valley's greatest shopping center, is now Demolition Alley. Braddock Avenue has been nicknamed Plywood Avenue. A string of boarded-up stores, empty lots, and abandoned shelves. Places like Sadowski Brothers Toy Store, where we used to get most of our Christmas presents from.
It's just everything's totally collapsed. Imagine I'll tearing the building down sooner or later. There's no roof left. There's nothing left in there. You can't even walk in because you just might get crushed. And if you walk by in the summer, then you get that fresh smell of like burnt wood that comes through an abandoned building.
Also gone are the movie houses, the Paramount, the Capitol, the Times, Fat Willie's Pool Room, Isley's, home of the Skyscraper Ice Cream Cone.
With the tearing down of the old Coney Island hot dog shop, was open 24 hours, and you come up here like on, weekend nights, like doing school nights, and you're up there at 2 in the morning and just hanging out on the street corner. There's always something going on with people coming back from the bars and getting some hot dogs in Coney Island.
We were unique. We were unique to, you know, this area. We were unique to the state. I think we were unique to the country.
That's Millie Devich, president of the Braddock Borough Council. She believes in God, country, and Braddock.
We were very giving. We were very caring. You had that, hello, good morning, good afternoon. You see a Catholic priest even though you weren't Catholic. Good morning, Father. You'd see a black minister. Good morning, Pastor. You had that respect.
How do you think they got lost?
Well, my personal firm belief is that when God left the heart and he left the home, he left the soul, he left the person, and they became the God. So as a result, they couldn't communicate, because when you become the great I am and look out for yourself and you're number one, what can you do to make this a better community?
I don't know if God ever left Braddock. I do know that the ceramic angels next to the Madonna statue in our backyard disappeared one Christmas. Some people think they were stolen, but I always told my grandmother they ascended into heaven. And a lot of other things have left. Long before the recession, businesses started moving out to the suburban malls, so shoppers stopped coming to Braddock. Some of the people who worked in the steel mills could afford to move up the hill and out of Braddock. Then the layoffs hit. Braddock's population, more than 20,000 in the 1950s, is down to 4,600. It all happened so gradually, nobody seemed to notice. Or if they did notice, no one did anything to stop it.
There wasn't a plan, and there wasn't a vision and a foresight for the future. So as a result, as the years went on, then the town started slowly deteriorating.
Jimmy Roy, who now sells gold jewelry out of the Plaza restaurant, as he waits for his book and movie deals to come through, has a slightly different theory as to why Braddock went downhill.
I tried to bet and invest every dime I had to revitalize Braddock, but from the lack of cooperation and a pessimistic thinking that permeated some of the businessmen and some of the so-called leaders, the politicians of Braddock, I could not get any cooperation. Therefore, the negative thinking that permeated Braddock destroyed it. It was the negative thinking that destroyed Braddock.
One theory I have is that consumerism, the keystone to our economy, had something to do with Braddock's decline. We have disposable cups, disposable diapers, disposable appliances, and why not disposable towns? In the 50s and 60s, there was white flight. African Americans moved in, and some whites moved out so fast they didn't even take their Madonnas with them. When the malls went up, businesses abandoned Braddock, and when the steel industry declined, longtime workers were laid off, discarded. Loyalty was never a factor. This fall, 270 jobs were eliminated here at Egger Thompson when a new automated continuous caster was installed. The caster takes molten steel, shapes it into continuous slabs. USX says this $250 million machine saved the mill from closing up altogether.
Well, I'm Thomas Farrell, and I'm Director of Public Affairs for the U.S. Steel Group, which is a unit of USX Corporation. Putting the caster into this plant here in Braddock spells the difference between whether we would continue to make steel in the Pittsburgh area or whether we wouldn't. And really, this plant here in Braddock stands as the last real bastion of carbon steel making in what I would call Pittsburgh proper.
If someone who worked at Egger Thompson around the turn of the century or even in the 1950s saw the plant today, he probably wouldn't know where he was. The control room looks like the deck of the Starship Enterprise, with banks of computers and TV monitors everywhere. But on this particular day, Captain Kirk and his crew seem to be experiencing some force field problems. A top priority emergency warning sends everyone scrambling.
Go down the minimum, senior. Go down the minimum.
Where I'm at.
Workers in silver spacesuits scurry to clean up the molten steel that's spilled up over the top of a mold. But the operation doesn't stop. The computers rotate huge vats into place to cast the slabs of steel that will eventually be made into refrigerators, washers, dryers, and microwave ovens. Appliances built to wear out and be disposed of. My dad worked at Egger Thompson for 42 years, a dangerous 42 years, and for my mother, pretty nerve-wracking.
One day, I was cleaning some vegetables at the sink, and I turned around, and he was standing under the doorway in the kitchen. And he scared me. I said, God in heaven, what are you doing here now? And he says, there was a bad accident in the mill. The guy in front of him was killed. He says, something just went over his head, but the fellow in front of him, he saw the guy getting killed. But every day I prayed that the good Lord would send him home safe.
So how are you feeling?
Well, a little bit better now. Sure. But I still have that coughing it up.
Coal miners get black lung from breathing all the coal dust in the mines. Steelworkers get red lung from breathing all the smoke and dust in the mills. The past few months, my dad has been in and out of the hospital with pulmonary problems.
You think 42 years in the mill has anything to do with it?
I had to work in the mill to keep things going. So what else are you going to do then?
My dad never wanted me or my brother to work in the mill, and we didn't need much convincing. For a long time, I thought the barbed wire around Egger Thompson was to keep the workers in. But for others, the mill was like insurance. You could screw up in high school and still get a good paying job at Egger Thompson. Now, it's almost impossible to find work at the plant, or get a decent paying job anywhere in the Mon Valley with only a high school education. Of course, there does seem to be quite a bit of work in demolition. This is the Talbot Towers, an abandoned public housing project right across the street from Edgar Thompson. To build Talbot Towers in the 50s, they tore down most of the cramped row houses where the Eastern European and African American mill workers lived. Pretty soon they're going to tear down these buildings, which in the end house mostly low-income African Americans. State and local officials are hoping to bring some light industry to the site, part of a Braddock improvement plan. We caught up with one of those officials, our state representative Tom McLovick, at Saturday night mass at the Good Shepherd Church.
Over the long term, next 10, 20 years, we're going to see the lower portion of Braddock, below Braddock Avenue, and below a new highway, hopefully, that will come through there, be more industrial, light industrial, maybe some commercial. But the residential down there is eventually going to die out.
The residential area Representative McLovick is talking about is populated mostly by African Americans and is where Bethel Baptist Church is located. The longing for Braddock's good old days is not as strong among African Americans. They remember the blatant discrimination in the public schools, in the movie theaters, in housing. And there's a different view here of Braddock's needs today.
My name is Phyllis Brown. I'm a lifelong resident of Braddock, and I'd like to be identified as an advocate for the youth and a rebel for the rest. I would like to say light industry, sure, to help support the town, but also housing. We have people that had to move from the senior citizens building in Talbot Towers that had lived in Braddock all their years, that were in their twilight years, that were uprooted. Today, you know, they come to our church on the bus from Homestead, from Whitaker. I really feel that we should have scattered housing. And not only look at the upper part, look down at the lower part too, because this is our home.
Yeah, well, I was raised, you know, below the tracks.
Right.
And nobody's ever really respected
people. Right, in the and lower you're still part. Below the tracks, huh?
That's right. Nobody is.
Actually, if the new highway is built, that may change. There's a good chance the Mon Valley Expressway will cut right through the lower half of town, in which case I'll have to look for funding for my last film about Braddock. One of the scenes will include a bulldozer demolishing my house. So my idea for improving Braddock keeps the houses intact and puts more of an emphasis on bringing in small retail and wholesale businesses on Braddock Avenue, like Stambolis' poultry shop.
How
are
you doing?
Okay.
There you go. How are you?
This is one of the most successful businesses in Braddock. I think they're getting ready to expand.
How you doing?
Give me your name. Tell me who you
Gus
are.
Gus Stambolis from the Stambolis Poultry. Next year will be 40 years here. Yeah. And things are looking good. You know, they're building a Rite Aid drugstore across the street, and they bought the whole block. And there are a few other places are trying to buy businesses in Braddock now, from what I hear, you know. If they fix that block where they get the guys not loitering on the street, that would be nice corners there, you know?
Yeah, it's always been a good corner for business.
Yeah. You remember 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you had to walk on the street Saturday night. The sidewalk was jammed.
And there are plenty of other people who haven't given up on Braddock. The Braddock Housing Task Force buys and fixes up houses for low-income people. Habitat for Humanity is hard at work. The Reverend Oliver Dent tries to get young men off the streets, off drugs, and into jobs. And down at the Carnegie Library, Jeanette Carolina runs after-school programs for kids.
Now give me one.
When people talk about Braddock, they talk as if the streets have rolled up, folded up, and the people have gone home forever. There are still people here.
Hi, my name is Lida Stell, and I have been with the Braddocksfield Historical Society approximately 12 years.
Since 1979, Lida and other Braddock residents like Dave Solomon and Evelyn Benzo have been restoring the Carnegie Library. It was Andrew Carnegie's first library in America. He built it in 1889, right after he crushed the union at the Edgar Thompson Works. A few years later, Carnegie added a swimming pool, steam baths, bowling alleys, a billiard room, and a spectacular auditorium.
This was the main entrance. Of course, it was well lit in those days. But you can see this doorway here, and there's one on the other side. That's where the ticket people were.
People from all over the Mon Valley used to pack this auditorium for vaudeville shows, organ recitals, jazz concerts. Lida and others think, with some work, the place can eventually bring the crowds back to Braddock.
The acoustics are so great. You don't need any public address system. You can hear in the back of the balcony as well as you can up there. And you can see why we would like to have it done again. I think it would be beautiful.
There are other ideas for Braddock. Barber Red Schwartz has one of the most innovative proposals.
The best thing for this town, get a bulldozer and level it off, put a racetrack down here, a dog track down the other end, and we'll make all kind of money.
That's right. Sell parking.
Right?
That's it.
Oh, damn right.
Or maybe Braddock can be made into an industrial theme park. You could put up some shabby row houses without plumbing, some scenery to make the town look like it did when the mills were booming, dump a few tons of pollutants into the air and the river, and hire some actors to play steelworkers who've been the victims of industrial accidents. Of course, a new president's coming in who's promised to rebuild America. So we went to Woodland Hills Junior High School to see maintenance man and Braddock mayor, Bucky Napolitano.
I've been a mayor for 7.5 years, and it's been a pretty rough 7.5 years.
Do you think with the Democrats now, with Clinton, it's going to make any difference for Braddock?
No, I don't think so. It's not going to trickle down this far into Braddock or even in the county. But he's got a task on his hands right now. He's not going to worry about boroughs like Braddock and North Braddock. You know, that's a long way off.
What do you see Braddock 10 years from now?
Probably the same way it is today. It's not going to change. It's not going to ever come back. Not the way it was.
While the mayor isn't exactly bubbling with optimism, back at the Plaza restaurant, Braddock's high priest of positive thinking, Jimmy Roy, says better days for Braddock are just around the corner.
I think, really think now, since Bill Clinton got in, the economy is going to change a little, and that'll give people a positive feeling about the future. And naturally, when people begin to think positive, they act positive. So I really think I really think Braddock's going to come back, but I think it's going to take another year, year and a half.
I never did have Jimmy's optimism. I see Braddock as a reverse of a David Lynch movie. Lynch goes into little suburban towns with their ranch houses, white picket fences, and chemically sprayed lawns. Then goes behind those ranch houses and finds the decay. In Braddock, the picket fences are not all white. The lawns not chemically sprayed, and beyond those boarded up stores is not decay but a vibrancy. A vibrancy generated by all the people in this community who struggle every day to make their town better. I'm glad my parents stuck around, and that I have stayed, and gotten to know the Dave Quicks, the Pat Lewandowskis, the Lynn Edwards, the people who work hard for their families and for their town, a town with a steel mill. I still get a chill when I walk around Braddock and look at that mill, with its beautiful omnipresent plumes, which USX insists are 100% steam, not smoke. Some towns have their mountains, others have their seashore. Braddock has the mill. So if you're ever in the Pittsburgh area, head east. Wind up and down some hills until you see those huge plumes. Then drive into Braddock. And if you can see the community behind the plywood, give me a call. We'll go to the library, take a tour of the town, and then go to the plaza for a cup of coffee.
The mere idea of you, the longing here for you, you'll never know how slow the moment goes until I am near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Let's play that back. Can you play that back?